Hi, Stress Radio, and all the listeners on Stress Radio. This is Ian Svenonius. Here in Portugal, here in Lisbon, tonight, December 4th, Friday night, one night only, live and direct, to play a concert as Escapism, named after the James Brown song, and also show my movie, What is a Group? It's a movie on 16mm film, stars my band, Chain and the Gang, and I'm also presenting my new book. It's called Censorship Now. It's a book of essays.
Each one of those projects?
Well, Escapism is, it's like a collage. It's like sound collage. And it's an attempt to, I wanted to, you know, do a performance, a rock and roll performance, but also, you know, incorporate, you know, things like sports, weather, traffic, things like that. And just the found sounds, sound effects. So that's really what Escapism is, and it's just me right now. It's just me, Escapism. Escapism. What is a Group is a 16mm film I made with people in D.C. It stars, where I'm from, where I live, Washington, D.C., and it stars Michelle May from my old group, The Makeup, and Kid Congo Powers. Has Alex Minoff from my old group Weird War. It has Mary Timoney in it. Has Katie Alice Greer, a local singer, and another local, you know, just some local musicians starring in it. And it's like it's kind of a sci-fi documentary about making a record and the kind of social and political ramifications or social and political aspects of the historical act of record making. So that's what that is. It's called What is a Group? It's just a 33 and one-third minute film about making a record. It's a sci-fi, science fiction documentary. And then the other thing, oh, my book, Censorship Now. It's just a bunch of essays. It just came out last month in the USA. It's called Censorship Now. It's 16 essays. It's my third book. And it's an underground smash hit because it's a book that has a revolutionary reassessment of modern life.
I'm so used to see you and hear you as in a band.
Yeah.
Especially in like a kind of live band.
Yeah.
Even in each band you had, makeup, with words, etc. Always very active, and it seemed always that it is a sound that's very connected to the audience.
I never
saw it live, unfortunately. But for me it was really strange when I started hearing about your books and now the films, because it's not so dynamic. It's a one-way connection, no? One-way language. I mean, of course, the spectator can think about it and make its own narrative, but it's quite different as the participation it's needed in a concert, for example.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, there's lots of different ways to say things, and there's some things that you want to say that aren't going to be, it's not going to work as a live concert, you know. You know, also, yeah, it's like a different thing. But there's definitely a thread. And I agree with you, it's not satisfying in the same way. A live experience, a performance, is very satisfying in a very particular way. And when you write a book, or you write an essay, or you make a film, you know, the response isn't the same. You never get the same, that satisfaction from communicating live with all these people. But it's not that those media are, you know, they're obviously quite, you know, cool in their own way. And there's particular things that, you know, you can only say in a film or in a book.
In your writings, in your essays, you are in some kind of way provocative, and there are always some questions for the reader.
I mean, the books are quite controversial. Provocative is a word. The new book is called Censorship Now. It proposes the idea of a people's censorship. You know, we think of censorship, the word is anathema. It's a heresy to the modern person to talk about censorship. But what we, you know, but one look around, you know, one day in the, you know, in the modern context, you know, convinces you that we need a people censorship, a kind of harnessing of, you know, free speech. The idea of free speech is beautiful, but in fact it's, you know, when we look at who monopolizes the right to free speech, we realize that we need a people censorship. You know, when you look at Hollywood movies, when you look at the television, the internet, what's on the radio, you know, culture as we know it, it requires a, you know, we need to blot it out. And, but that's just one part of the book. The book is, you know, it's a study on the history of rock and roll. It's a discussion about, you know, computers, and, you know, there's a chapter about dancing. It's just a kind of a, you know, an assessment, or a lot of, you know, different proposals about, you know, different phenomenon, I guess. Anyway, the last book, my last book, Supernatural Strategies for Making a Rock and Roll Group, was a how-to manual for making a group, but it was done as an occult, you know, as an occult supernatural guide, and it utilized a seance with talking to ghosts of dead rock stars who guide the reader through the you know, the different stages or the different aspects of starting a rock and roll group and what the ramifications are. And then my first book, Psychic Soviet, that's a book of essays about, you know, the world. But anyway, but you know, all these books, I mean, it's just a way of talking that you can't talk. You can't, like this interview. Like an interview is something that's very particular. You know, all rock and roll groups do interviews. But this kind of communication would be impossible on stage. People wouldn't want to see this conversation on stage. Necessarily. Maybe they would. But when people are looking for the visceral experience of a rock and roll show, they don't necessarily want to see a conversation.
It seemed that you were talking more, at least my idea, it wasn't so much about censorship, but more about filters, or even we could go to something like education, like self-education about culture, about politics.
Yeah. Standards.
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 Yeah.
We need some standards. But how do we impose these standards when we have no control? You know, every step toward a democratic future, like the internet, for example, which was supposed to democratize the world, is actually another step toward fascism, mm-hmm. and another step toward, like, total reduction of, you know, the voices that are involved. It's reductionist.
Some days ago I was listening to a guy, I think, I don't remember his name, but I think he's the guy, one of the guys that is involved in this Tor project, Tor browser, the use of the internet in the dark web and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
He was proposing something like, we create, more or less what you say, more or less we create our own censorship, or our own filters, our own encryption.
Yeah.
So the internet could be
clean. A utopian vision, like one of these religious communities in the new world, the Shakers, or something. Yeah, that sounds good to me. The problem is people like me who aren't very good with computers. How are we supposed to get on the dark web, you know? Also, why should we have to retreat to the dark web? We should take the world as it is. I mean, the whole web is dark. The idea that we're all communicating through the internet is already sinister. So it's one of those things, like, you know, we've got the numbers, all we need is the will. We need the bravery to face the hard choices, because once people are conservative by nature, as soon as something becomes standard, then we can't imagine the world without it. The capitalists they specialize in trauma, traumatizing people with revolutionary transformation, but we are actually very afraid of revolutionary transformation. It gets forced on us by these sadists. So we have to learn to implement these kind of revolutionary transformations. We have to be brave.
Out there that does makes sense to me.
One of the things it seemed to me that you always try to carry in your music and what you do is lots of references. I remember the first time I heard, like in the 90s, it was the first time I heard about Arthur Ray, for example.
Oh, that's good.
That you are always concerned about putting some seeds inside so people not only listen to you, but also go find some other things.
Well, that was easier to do. You know, now people are much more sophisticated. So before it was like, it wasn't easier to do, it seemed more important. Whereas now people are very sophisticated and they kind of find it out. But you can still say, what I do like to do now is still, as then, is create a kind of context. You know, so you say, this is the context, not, you know, when people write a history, they're always inventing a context that they want people to understand them existing in, you know, or their thing. You know, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you can make an argument, you know, you could say, you know, you could put any, I don't know, you can, it's just how you frame things. What you say is, you know, you can, because everything has a lot of roots, for example. So it's which roots you decide to pull up and expose. And that's the history of things. Or everything has a lot of, you know, not only does it have a lot of roots, it has a lot of branches. So it's which branches do you choose to accentuate? And you see this, when you see things being historicized, you notice that over the ages, that it changes. The things that are being accentuated, are maybe different depending on the era and what's considered valuable. So it's something that's very fascinating to me to think about, you know, history and the way that it's framed and the way, you know, because it's all kind of a fantasy. Or not a fantasy, but it's very selective. It's always very selective.
Some kind of way you can make your own history, you can draw the past in your own way.
Yeah, or you can draw you can make a history of the world in the same way, like just like the ruling elite do, you know. And you see these histories, that's why there's such a struggle over history, you know, revisionism. What happened in the world, you know, as historians can, you know, make a case for whatever, depending on what they want to, you know, to be carried as values, you know.
Are you optimistic about the present and the future?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that, because, I'm optimistic. You know, if I'm at a place called ZDB in Lisbon, and it's like, and I'm meeting interesting people, it's very inspiring and cool, you know. But if I'm just reading the news at home, I'm very pessimistic. So isolation, I think, makes people very pessimistic. I think it's very important to go into the world.
To do things like culturally in a independent way, or even DIY. You think this idea makes sense in the 21st century and our day?
Oh yeah, I mean, well, DIY, the term has been, you know, really appropriated, and it's a pretty goofy term at this point, because the, you know, the modern world is this fetish for old. Yeah, I mean, DIY, the term, yeah, it's a little bigger. But yeah, doing things on a personal level and enthusiasts, I think it's, you know, the best way to do things. Do I miss it? Oh, when I was an interviewer. Yeah, yeah, I do miss it a little bit. I would like to do that again. Yeah, that was a fun thing to do. Yeah, I'm thinking of doing something similar. Because honestly, yeah, I feel like there's just a lot of people to talk to. Because all the people I was talking to were kind of legends. They were people with long careers, legends. And at the time, it wasn't... The environment wasn't... that good for younger musicians who are very outspoken, opinionated, but now I think, right now I think it would be a very good time to talk to, you know, young musicians with something to say.
Yeah, it would be like a little bit different, because that other season, let's call it, it was more like some true legends.
Yeah, exactly. It was all lifers.
Yeah.
People 25 years of music at least. So and at the time we were trying to find, you know, young people, but they'd all be, oh, I have nothing to say, you know, this kind of, oh. But right now I feel like there would be a lot of people who would be great interviews. Well, I don't want to name names, because then I might leave somebody out.
Do you have plans for the near future?
Well, I have to promote my book. I have to go back to the USA and, you know, promote, you know, trying to get people to look at the book. So I'm going to go to some, you know, bookstores and tell people about the book. It just came out. So I've only gone and made, you know, you have to sort of, you know, do some footwork, you know. And then, so I'll do a little bit of that, and then I want to make a... You know, and then I want to do some, you know, oh, and then there's a Chain in the Gang recording session we're going to do in January.
No chance to see Makeup live, playing live?
I mean, I don't know, we did a couple shows and some of them were quite good, quite fun, and I think we could do it again. We've discussed it, but we have no plans. We have no specific plans, but if we make any, I'll try to come here.
Oh, please do.
That would be great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me here on Stress Radio. Thanks a lot.
Oh, it's gone?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
I don't know.
People talk about reparations.
They do.
Yeah? Yeah, they do. People talk about reparation.
Yeah,
well, me too. I want reparations from the government.
Yeah.
I want reparations from the school.
Yeah.
I want reparations from the TV.
Yeah.
I want reparations from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna need some reparation. the people who made this country, they weren't given one red cent. The people who built this country ended up scavenging, living in tents. Well, I've been laughed at, I've been spit on, kicked and abused. Yeah, I want reparations. Yeah. Well, how about you?
This is Ian Svenonius from Chain and the Gang. When I'm in Lisbon, I always tune in to Stress FM.